So last night, dude, I was after dinner. The boys were like, "Hey, Dad, let's go out and play wiffle ball." I'm like, "Ooh, sweet.
I love wiffle ball.
Let's go. Let's go out there and play." So we had a family wiffle ball game. We're out there. Jude is up to bat, and I'm pitching. And I throw it's pretty good little sinker. And he cranks it. Home run.
Rude.
I mean, just...
On your dad, in front of the whole family.
Family. It was embarrassing. Yeah, cranks it. Next up to bat, he gets up there, and he's, you know, he's right-handed. He's bats right-handed. And he's standing there on the left side. And Jude, what are you doing?
He's flexing on you.
And he goes...
He's feeling his oats.
He goes, just pitch the ball, Dad. Go, okay. I was like, I'm not going to let him.
Right.
It's like, okay.
Well, you got it, buddy.
Yeah. So the first one, you know, I had to brush him off the plate. He was kind of guarding the plate, kind of threw it pretty close to him just to try to let him know, hey.
Absolutely.
Like, I need you to back up a little bit.
Yeah, because you can hit people in wiffle ball. There's no take your base.
Right. So
because it's a wiffle ball.
Right. So brushed him off the plate, right? Second pitch, he swings it like it's a right-handed bat and cranks it out of the park again. And I go, Jude, how did you bat left-handed? He goes, oh, I found out today that I can bat left-handed.
Oh, Dad, I forgot to tell you. I found out today I can do that.
Yeah. And I go, what? The kid, like, and dude, you know how if you try to do something, like try to throw left-handed and not look like a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or whatever. You know, look like you don't know what you're
right.
How you're throwing the ball.
Everybody knows what you mean.
And, you know, do the batting left-handed. Same thing, right? I mean, you just look awkward. Like, it's not fluid. It's not smooth.
It's like real choppy at best.
Dude, somehow my boy is like, just realized he can just go bat either way. Ambidextrous, just cranks it out of the park again. I'm like, well, guess we got to look into maybe playing baseball. Cause
this is that moment that every father fears. Where, you know, you have this child and, you know, you like try to encourage him, like, oh, kind of let him have small wins here and there. But, you know, like, look, I'm a man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can't actually beat me
mm-hmm.
until one day. Actually, they can.
I'm really looking forward to the day that I can beat my dad.
And that, yeah, I know. You know what? I'll bet if your dad were to pitch a wiffle ball.
I could crank one out of the park.
I'll bet
I could win there.
Now, it's really just in like a sort of a physical competition, like a hand-to-hand physical. Your dad is just...
Still going to
beat me. He definitely will win.
Yes. But it was just so crazy.
Dad will be in a wheelchair.
And still
be able to, like pin you.
Yeah.
From a wheelchair.
Right. I know.
He'll just be wheeling on you.
Just like put one foot over me and it'd be over.
Yeah.
But it was so crazy. Like I was in shock to see Jude just crank it out of the park.
Gosh, that must have been humiliating.
It was, it was kind of actually more proud. I was like, that because it
you
was
know,
like
that's
it's
a
super
good that's a really good cover, like emotionally, yeah. Mentally. I think I would also immediately try to default to that so that I could sleep
right
that night, that I could still walk in and kiss my wife with like the confidence that I've always had. I think that's probably a smart move on your part.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't make a lot of smart moves, but
that was one of them.
That was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think while they're at school, maybe you should
practice a little bit more.
Get some extra reps in or something.
Maybe so. It was impressive. I was impressed. It's like,
nice.
Just right-handed, left-handed. Yeah, I couldn't do that.
And he's like, Dad, why don't you pitch left-handed?
Yeah.
No.
Right. Or even bat left-handed.
I could.
I would not bat left-handed either. Like,
I'd be much more confident batting left-handed than pitching left-handed.
Me too.
Though. I mean, that's not close. It's not
totally.
The same.
Totally.
Totally different thing.
That's why I brush my teeth left-handed.
Dude, I remember the first time you told me that when we were driving to give a talk somewhere. And you told me like, every now and then, I just brush my teeth left-handed. And I was like, why? And you're like, you know, just so I can, I forget exactly what you said, but it was like, so I can stay, you know, like
coordinated,
you know, and I just started laughing and I was like, for what? what are you like, bro? You're like, your days of like athleticism, you know, it's not high school football anymore, dude. Like, what are you hanging on to? Like, brushing my teeth, gotta stay coordinated. All right.
Also, completely unrelated, I have 4 cavities right now.
Nice. That was good.
So today I'm very excited about the bottle that we opened up for the show. I actually already opened it once. So I got this at Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. You know, while I was there, there was a really great liquor store down there that has like a ton of different whiskeys. And I thought, next time I'm going down there, I'm going to stock up for the show. But I found a bottle that we haven't tried yet. From Laphroaig. We've had the Caridos.
Karchus,
Caridos.
It looks like Caridos.
Karchus.
Apparently, if you speak
in Gaelic.
Gaelic. It's Karchus.
And I grabbed it because anytime I can find one, I'm like, I want that.
Right. And this is the Karchus. They change it every year.
Right.
It's a little bit different every year. What year is this one that you have? Does it say? I forget.
Maybe,
is it on the box?
I did do the research before, but this was like a couple weeks ago.
2024.
Okay. Thank you.
So I don't have to go back and look, because we used to have, you know, in the past we've had the Karchus release when they put it out.
Right.
But dude, I don't know. Like, it's been a while since we've had it. So, I doubt we had the 2024.
I don't think we have. And so I was at my uncle's house, and because he was very kind to let me stay there while I was at the hospital, and we were, you know, having a couple of drams and talking about, I hadn't seen him in a long time, and talking to him, and he's a big whiskey guy, but he's a bourbon guy, and I said, oh, I just got a bottle of Laphroaig, let me share it with you. So I've never had a Laphroaig, and I was like, okay, well, today's the day.
Yeah, buckle up.
And he had probably the same reaction that we had the first time we tried it. He was not I don't think he was a very big fan.
Whoa!
Yeah. So I did break into it just a little bit beforehand, but anyway, I'm really excited about it. It's incredibly delicious. So it's a cask favorites. It's aged 10 years. Fruit, ginger, and obviously peat. It's 52.4% ABV. You know, and Karchus means friendship in
Correct.
Gaelic,
yes.
Right? And we're actually going to be talking a little bit about friendship again today. And one of the things that it's made for the friends of Laphroaig, right? So if you subscribe to their whatever their system that they have, where you can get a little plot of, you can have a
dude. I have my one square foot.
I do too, but I think actually you have to renew it every once in a while, and I have not renewed mine.
Dude, I have mine framed, so they better not take it from me.
But anyway, this is it's 30 years since we've had. Okay, so
it doesn't say what they finished or aged.
Triple wood
in.
And PX casks.
Okay, it's not
so
on the box.
This 10 year old aged is X bourbon and quarter casks before it's finished in PX casks.
Okay, so it's in quarter casks as well.
Yes, so adding fruity sweetness to the peat smoke that the friends all know. And love.
The reason I ask is because the color is so dark.
Well, the PX casks is what does
yes.
that.
Yeah, but you know, typically Laphroaig, the Islay scotches in general, just generally speaking, don't have this deep of a color. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting when we poured it.
It's like a cherry almost color.
Yeah, I mean.
Dark amber.
Very much so.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So where's your glass?
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
So this has... It's got the smoke and peat that you'd expect from a Laphroaig.
We all know and love.
But it definitely has a different flavor profile to it.
Absolutely. Yes. It does have a little bit of that fruity. I think ginger actually, when they say ginger, it's like, yes, that I would not have been able to.
Kind of that spiciness.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to articulate that, but totally agree.
Yeah. It's very good. Do you remember what it costs? They're usually kind of expensive.
Yeah, I think this one was like 130 or 140. Yeah, yeah.
That's about what they normally are.
Yeah. Because it's also the older one, right? So like as time goes, mm-hmm. I think they kind of upped that price.
But the cartridge release is always a limited release anyway. So right. It's a little bit, it costs more.
So
we just got a couple of minutes. Do you want to give an update on Mary? How's she doing?
Sure. Yeah, really quick. She's off the paralysis medicine. So basically she's no longer paralyzed. We were paralyzing her and kind of keeping her just
to
alive.
Keep her stable.
And so we got to the point where we had to get her off. We tried twice. It did not work well. This last time, it went well, thanks be to God. She's now off the paralysis medicine. She's still very heavily sedated, but not paralyzed. So she's able to open her eyes and kind of look around. All of her numbers seem to be good.
Oxygen numbers.
Yeah, oxygen and blood pressure and heart rate and all that stuff seems to be relatively good, depending on the day. But right now we're having more wins than losses for the most part.
Yeah, more good days than bad days.
So yeah. We're very, very grateful.
Please keep her in your prayers.
Yes,
continue.
Please.
I know, like...
I know. Gosh. You guys have been, and I'm very grateful, and so is Lady Haley. So thank you so much.
Great. So we're going to talk about friendship today.
Sure.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Drinking some Karchus scotch. Going to be talking about friendship. Karchus, as we mentioned, is Gaelic for friendship.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about this, but we're going to talk about it because we've talked about friendship on and off.
Many times.
Many times on our show. But where I want to maybe focus is the spiritual paternity of friendship. And what it looks like being able to mentor or disciple one another while you're still trying to figure it out and what that really means. So, like, you know, mentoring when you're still becoming. And I think that's something that I remember, at least when, you know, I went through this bell curve, basically, when we first started, taking our faith more seriously. Everything was new, learning, you know, the virtue of studiousness, you know, we were just both, you and I both were just kind of consuming every bit that we could, you know, in our free time, right? We were reading, we were studying, we were listening to things. I mean, we were just like constantly consuming. And it's intoxicating. It gets exciting. You're learning new things about the faith. You're like, I can't believe that this saint said this, or, you know, have you read this book? Or, you know, you're just constantly learning about new things, right?
Yeah.
And so the fruit of that, maybe, or the what comes of that is, like, you can't help but want to share it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You're just like, I just can't wait to talk to Dave about this, or I can't wait to talk to your buddy about this.
And you
this.
Think, like, I should start a podcast.
And just talk about this.
Yeah.
And so you want to share it all the time with everybody, and you're like, I just can't wait to tell you everything that I know about this. And then, like, that's kind of maybe the top of the bell curve, or as you kind of... entered into the top of the bell curve. And then as you continue reading and you maybe start gaining a little bit more spiritual maturity and you start realizing, like, crap.
Like, you realize that you know less than you think.
I don't know near as much as what I think I do. And as you're going up that bell curve, you just can't wait to, like, tell people about it. Like, hey, come on, let's, you kind of disciple people.
You feel like, no, I know the answers.
Right.
Let me tell you.
And I just can't wait to tell you about it. And then the more you learn about it, then kind of the more you want to just say, like, ooh, maybe I should not try to be this role, or maybe I should not, like, try to be the guy head of RCIA or the guy who is supposed to be taking questions and answers
right.
for the OCIA groups or leading men's ministries, or, you know, you kind of start realize, you kind of start taking a step back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think the temptation, I think there's some prudence there, right? Because realizing that you don't know what you don't know or how little you know, there's some real effects or damage that you could cause by asserting yourself, thinking that you know something mm-hmm. to somebody who's, you know, kind of interested.
Having a bad spiritual director can be very harmful.
Yes, exactly. And if you are the spiritual director, quote unquote, you know, quote unquote, that's not a good position to be in.
Yeah.
And so the other extreme is, as you're kind of realizing this, is that you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm not qualified for this. This isn't something that I should be doing. And so you actually lose that, or you kind of forfeit that zeal or that desire to spread the good news, to continue to disciple, to continue to try to evangelize, because you feel unqualified. And you end up not being able to use the things in which the Lord has given you in order to draw people closer to Him. And so I reflecting on this, I've seen the way I have at least approached evangelization, and how I've wanted to try to, you know, obviously want to make disciples of Christ. I want people to fall deeper in love with the Lord, because it's the greatest adventure that you can have in this life.
Yeah.
But I think there's ways in which you should go about doing it. And it's important to kind of have a game plan or like an understanding of the ways that are most successful. We've also talked about on the show how to evangelize without being weird.
Yeah.
Because you also don't want to be this.
You don't want to be weird. Don't be weird.
Don't be weird. Don't be weird.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk about like having the courage to still mentor while you're still trying to figure it out. And I think the context there is in friendship. And that's where you actually don't become weird, because you're built on friendship. That's kind of the building block. And then friendships, you share life with one another. Mm-hmm. And if your life is the foundation of your life is Christ, then it's going to naturally come about. And so I want to, one, encourage guys to continue and not lose the zeal and the desire to share Christ with one another. I also want to kind of bring or maybe caution the guys who are like just starting out, you know, just starting to take their faith seriously. If you just got married, have a baby, and you're just, I got to be the spiritual head of my house, and I got to, you know, do all these things, you know, because I am, you know, I'm the guy that's supposed to be learning as much as I can and teaching the faith to my family and to my friends. You know, just maybe some cautionary steps that you can take, and how to really do it, I think, in the most fruitful way and also not damage anyway. I don't know. That's kind of...
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a balance to be struck, because on the one hand, you when you have that zeal in the beginning, that's also a gift that, you know, I think the Lord uses that to encourage us, mm-hmm. okay, to help put us out there, right? To give us this confidence to, yes, you know what? Because the truth is, you will never know enough. You know, if you're waiting till you know enough,
right.
You'll never actually know enough. And that's a trap that you might fall into. But what you don't want to do is let yourself be fooled into thinking that you have all the answers, right?
Right.
But what you always have is your own experience. Okay. And that's, I think, where we can always speak confidently, where we can say, let me tell you what the Lord has meant for me. You know, and let me tell you what He has done in my life. Okay. I'm not going to have all the answers for the things you're going through, but what I can be is your friend.
Mm-hmm.
I can be here for you. Okay. I will not know the answers. I might be able to help you with some of them. Okay.
Right.
So you have to always be grounded in humility And this is, gosh, it's just funny that we're talking about this because I went to confession about a week ago.
Ooh, what'd you say?
Dude, I mean, I still have problems.
Okay? After I've explicitly told you to stop sinning?
Bro, I always forget that you tell me that. And then later I remember and it's like, Adam told me not to do that.
Okay.
But at that point, it's like, I already did it. But I, you know, so anyway, I had this, I went to confession and I was just praying afterwards. And it was a humiliating confession, you know, which is good. Those are good confessions. But I just really, the Lord was just really showing me how helpless I am. Okay. And I mean, and just how.
Oh, you too?
Yeah. And I had this profound sense of my own incredible weakness and how in the face of these temptations, what did I do on my own strength? Exactly nothing.
Cave.
Just it's exactly right. Instantly, almost.
Just like, you know, like a lawn chair whenever you just put it up and it just falls down like that.
It was like I was going into a situation. It's like, all right, I know this is going to be hard, but I'm resolved to do the right thing. And then the second I got to where I knew it was going to be, it's like, oh, I'm not, you know, and it just.
You just St. Peter'd it.
Just folded, right? And so I've just, that experience, that this moments I had after confession, I've just been really sitting with and just reflecting on my own weakness and really cherishing that. And I think that there's a really good analogy here with what we're talking about. You know, it's like, oh, you have this, but always remember that it's only by the grace of God that we will make progress.
That's right.
That, you know, we don't have the answers because we are not the answer. That is what I think ultimately the temptation is that that Satan will use any momentum in any direction. He's like a judo person. You know, he will use that momentum against you in one way or the other, whether it's into pride or it's into a mistake or it's into weakness or it's into inaction. You know, so we have to constantly be grounded in humility, in the recognition that I am nothing without Christ. I'm only anything because of Christ. I did not create myself. I have no power to save myself, to merit anything apart from his grace, you know, and it is only by relying totally and completely on him all the time that I can do what his will is for me, right? And so I think when it comes to being a mentor, that is really the lesson that we need to remember, because otherwise you will end up thinking that you are the answer.
That's right. It's so easy without even realizing it at first.
Yeah.
You know, right. It will slowly just kind of creep in.
And I think it's inevitable in everyone's journey. You're going to have to learn that lesson through mistakes.
Yeah.
Just the way we are. But those mistakes can be curbed by keeping these principles in mind.
Right. So we're going to reach out to St. Alred of Ravoux and talk about a little bit of friendship and what he had to say, because he's actually kind of like the spiritual doctor of friendship. Not officially, but that's like what he's known for.
All right.
So St. Alred of Ravoux is not a very well-known saint, not talked about a whole lot, but he had a profound effect on the church during the time that he lived. He lived in the 1100s, the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Cistercian monk, ended up becoming an abbot of Ravoux, and he was also, before that, even the head of the guys coming in to becoming a monk, what is that called? The novices? Novices. That's what I'm trying to think of. And so he had a lot of effect on the church and what it looked like for monks at that time, because they just came out of a council where at the time, coming into the end of the 11th, beginning of the 12th century, there was a lot of power in the clergy, and it was they were trying to separate a little bit of like the ownership of land and all these things from the clergy to kind of isolate powers, so to speak, because it was a lot of bloodlines, and like how people became bishops was through bloodlines and, you know, things like that. The whole power trip thing of that can easily take place. Bishops had a lot of power at the time. And so there was kind of a reform, so to speak, in the church where they were actually pushing parents that if they had sons, so if at the time that they had lessened the discipline of celibacy in the church for priests,
it relaxed that.
They relaxed the discipline, and they were reinforcing it back into practice.
Okay.
And basically was telling the parents that if your son is wanting to become a priest, he needs to become a monk, not necessarily a secular priest. And so St. Alred became a Cistercian monk, which Cistercians came from the Benedictine order. And at the time, the Benedictines kind of got a little lax on their disciplines. And so the Cistercians, thank you, was a little bit more rigid in their rules or kind of taking back the idea of what St. Benedict had when starting the Benedictine order. And so he came from like this ambitious dad, you know, this ambitious family. He had a lot of status and but he really focused on reforming and bringing, calling men higher into their vocation to become monks or to fulfill their vocation and what that calling really means. And so he wrote actually a book, and it's very, very thin. It's like less than a centimeter thick book on spiritual friendship. Now, I will just like kind of caveat this or like kind of give it a side note here that the book, there are some translations of this book that have gotten into modern hands and modern translations that make it sound a little bit like there's some same-sex attraction type of aspects in the friendships. And that's not what he said at all. That's not his intent at all. In fact, he makes it very clear that friendship actually cannot be rooted in vice, that I think it's just the sexualization of our culture that we have right now and trying to find something that's not there.
Yeah.
So just be aware of if you bring it, what translation you get. If
a
you
lot of those translations are actually holdovers from the 60s, 70s
right
era.
So just like, you know, kind of be aware of the translation that you get if you get one.
Okay.
So he has this whole like kind of doctrine of spiritual friendship, and it's like I said, it's not very long, very, very good book. Here's one of the quotes that he talks about, because he talks about how spiritual friendship is obviously rooted in Christ, and it's the love of God and love of neighbor that grows this friendship. And he said, like, if you have a spiritual friend, and you don't, and like your friend moves and you never see him again, you still have a spiritual friendship with that person, that he's still he's still a true friend, because it was not rooted in that person, but rooted in Christ.
Right.
In fact, he even says that while he was writing this book, one of his three friends, monk friends, passed away. And he said, not even death can separate spiritual friendship. And he talks, I think he even talks about how you can even see this, because you will see flowers or ornate things on the grave of these people. It's like, well, why would you do that? That person's dead. It's because it's a love of friendship, a love of that person rooted in Christ, that the person still cares for that person even after death.
Sure.
But he says, here we are, you and I hope that Christ makes a third with us. Like, that's how he starts.
Yeah. And I like that.
You know, that I hope that Christ makes a third with us.
Well, I was just, as you were saying that, thinking about how if you meet someone for the first time and you find out, oh, that they're a Catholic, there is automatically already a spiritual friendship that you share with them, right? Simply because of that.
It's rooted in Christ.
That shared love of Christ, right? And, you know, if you go back to the Aristotelian ideas of friendship, that, you know, we are oriented towards the good of the other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so automatically, I already desire for you the highest goods, and you already desire for me the highest goods. And because we are both members of Christ's church, the Catholic Church, we know what those highest goods are. So we are like, we already are meeting these prerequisites.
Right.
That friendship requires, authentic friendship requires.
Yeah, he even says, like, friendship is that virtue by which spirits are bound by ties of love and sweetness, and out of many are made one. So he's talking about how friendship is understood that it isn't solid, it's not solitary, but it's relational. And so he talks about, like, what spiritual paternity actually is.
Uh-huh.
Which is what we should consider maybe almost like a mentorship, right? And he talks about it's not like spiritual authority. It's not like a friendship isn't necessarily a student-teacher relationship. It's not like, okay, now that we are friends, I will now tell you everything that you need to know. You know, mm-hmm. That's not spiritual friendship. It's not a teacher-student relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you offer things to me that I can't, that I wouldn't be able to have. I can offer things to you that you wouldn't be able to have. And together, those things help us grow closer to Christ. So he cautions even the one who maybe know more about the faith to have the humility to understand that, like, that I can learn from this person as well, and that you shouldn't treat them like a student. And I think that's really important, because I think that's very a real big temptation. That if somebody's like coming into the church and you're like, okay, sweet, come here, let's have coffee. And then in your mind, you could easily think, okay, now I will begin my lecture.
Yes. I love to lecture. Once you become a dad, it just kind of grows.
And so, so he says, witnessing to another man's formation while staying committed to your own. So he also says that you need to make sure that you don't sacrifice your own commitments in order to be a spiritual father to another person. And that's a real temptation as well. And I think that I could see that obviously being a real temptation for the priesthood, right? That there's so many people that are in need of you. And that it's easy to say, I got to do the Lord's work. I got to do what the Lord wants me to do, yet not fulfill your own obligations.
Sure.
So he cautions against that. But then he talks about meeting together. And this is where I think we didn't realize what we were doing at the time, but ended up working out really well. Because he talks about when you meet together, that it's not about the depth of the conversation in which when you meet, but it's about the consistency.
Mm. That's interesting, because I think that would be a temptation to think otherwise. You know, like, oh, we get together, we have to make sure to talk about the deepest subjects we can.
We have to be as most effective and efficient with this time that we can possibly be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there, at the same time, there is some truth to that, that, you know, when you get together with your, you know, this, your close net of friends, you shouldn't just talk about politics or what, you know, you should strive to talk about the most meaningful things.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to take an attitude of
that you're just constantly trying to mine
yeah.
the time together for all these deep theological discussions.
Right. You don't want to end up with a Pelagian attitude
right.
towards your time together.
Right. And so this is something that I think the model that we have followed, every week, you and I, our buddy Scott, Brendan, Juan, like Clint and a couple others.
Yeah.
We all get together. And at first, when we first started getting together every week, it was about, let's read this church document together. Let's read the theology of the body together. Let's have a apologetics back and forth on this topic.
Yeah.
But then as it's matured and it's continued, and we've been doing this for well over 14 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
It has changed into more of like, I just want to share my life with you.
Yeah, it's just really about being together.
Right. We can talk about more of this on the other side. We'll be right back.
Christ said to his apostles, I no longer call you slaves.
Servants, but friends.
It's a very deep passage when you ponder the significance.
John 15.
Of what it means for Christ to call us a friend. A friend is someone who shares their entire life together. So for Christ to call us friends means that he is now sharing the entirety of his divine life with us.
And that's a great segue into, because one of the things St. Alred talks about is like one of the main ingredients that you have to have in these discussions, in these meetings and things like that, is vulnerability with one another.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about vulnerability a little bit, just because I think when you say that word, some guys kind of roll their eyes in the back of their head, and it's like, you know, like, I'm not here to share my feelings or...
It's kind of a buzzword.
It's a buzzword. And so, just out of curiosity, like, what do you, like, when you hear that, what do you think?
Well, I hear two things.
Okay.
I hear simultaneously the, you know, secular, touchy-feely, wishy-washy, you know, especially... I don't know, go back 10 years ago when people were talking about toxic masculinity, you know, and like promoting, there was this idea that was more popular then, and I'm thankful that it has become decidedly less popular now, of men who were in touch with their feminine side, okay? It was, you might say, you know, and there was that idea of vulnerability of, you know, just being so in tune with your weaknesses. I don't know. It was not a strong idea. It was a very weak, unattractive idea. So I hear that. But I also know the importance of vulnerability. Okay. So in our group of friends, if one of us is struggling with something, we all struggle with things.
We all got problems.
Yeah, dude. And that's why we're together, is to talk about those things that were, you know, hey, guys, this is what I'm dealing with. This is something that's been hard for me this week. Because in life, there will be times and seasons when you are not struggling with a certain thing, certain aspects of the spiritual life are easy. And then the next week, they are not. They are not easy. They are a struggle. And it's a mystery to me in my own life, why am I struggling with this now when I was not struggling with it before, right? And the Lord, in his goodness and in his infinite providence, guides us in all of these things. And part of the way he guides us is through these friendships, that these people that he's placed in our lives, that he has asked us, it is part of divine providence that we walk together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It is not good for man to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has made us, it's in our nature that we are a community. Right? That obviously marriage is that community par excellence. But also men, we need other men for accountability. And also so that we can, you know, say, hey, this is something I need. I'm struggling, please help me. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not about conforming ourselves to some weak form of masculinity. It's about being
a calling to greatness.
Yes, exactly. And saying, no, I am struggling with this. It's just a reality. I know I need to be, I'm called for something greater.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not achieve that by myself. And so that's why I'm telling you, please help me, please pray for me. What do you think I should do? And getting feedback, it's so hard to fix your own problems.
Because you have a lot of blind spots.
That's right.
I have found that and he actually even talks about this, St. Howard talks about this, that you should facilitate the conversation to have deeper conversations, right? He said, like, obviously, that the goal is not let's have a deep theological conversation. The goal is communion with one another in Christ. But you should order the time together to where you have the opportunity to talk about meaningful things. One thing that we've said before on the show, that a good way to start that is just asking a guy, how's your prayer life?
Yeah.
Not, hey, how are you doing? But, hey, how's your prayer life?
Right.
And that opens the door.
Yeah. You don't need to be a theologian to have deep, meaningful conversations. What you just said, hey, how's your prayer life? It's amazing how quick that gets to the core of you know, how are you actually doing, you know, right, in this walk with Christ? Ultimately, you know, another approach would just be, how am I doing at my vocation? Mm-hmm. As a father and as a husband, you know, what things are going well, what things are not going well, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking about your life through the lens of your vocation is a cheat code towards cutting out the noise. There's so many things that might be distracting. It's like, oh gosh, all of these things I see in my life need work. But thinking about all of these things through the lens of your vocation kind of weeds out a lot of those things. And then you come to realize, after you dive a little deeper, that all of these other things are actually just side effects of a deeper problem, which might not even seem like the biggest problem, but is a more essential problem,
mm-hmm,
which is, you know, often comes down to one of the seven deadly sins, you know, whether it's temperance. I think that's a big one for men.
Mm-hmm.
Guarding our appetites, you know, I was drinking too much, which caused me not to feel well. And all of a sudden I can't serve my family because I'm nursing the bad decisions of yesterday.
Right.
And now I can't be present in my family. I can't be present for my kids. My wife needs me, you know, and now I'm failing them, but it's causing me to turn inward, focus inward only on myself. Right. And that just promotes a bad habit. It disorients our spiritual focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about things like this, when you're with your friends, with your group, focusing on your vocation, how is your vocation doing? How is your prayer life? Because your prayer life is really the first ingredient.
Sure.
In achieving the vocation.
Yeah, it's the thermometer, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
Of your prayer life, or of your spiritual life. What I have found also is that when a man has the courage to talk about something that he maybe hiding in his life or struggling with, there's two things that could happen. The people who are listening could take the idea of, I want to try to fix him. And that's the wrong approach. Because you're not, like, the purpose isn't to try to fix somebody. The purpose is to walk alongside them and to support them to grow closer to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And to invite them into your life, your struggles, your strategies, your thought process to kind of maybe enlighten them into something that maybe they haven't seen before, or they're not seeing because they're blind on this aspect of it. But what I have found more like fruitful is when somebody has the courage to bring something up. I acknowledge, obviously, internally, like that took a lot of courage, a lot of guts to maybe bring that up. But what ends up happening, at least for me, is that the resolve doesn't actually help that person. It helps me a lot more.
Sure.
Because when somebody brings up something that they're struggling with, even if I feel like I am not struggling with it, it causes me to reflect on my life in that way. And I kind of put a mirror up of like, well, is that something that I'm struggling with? And inevitably, there's something about what he just said that I actually possibly am struggling with, but it was just not like well known to me because I hadn't thought about it in that way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And this is where I think the beauty of like a true spiritual friendship happens, is that bringing up something can reveal more about the man that is listening than actually speaking.
Sure. You know, and the other thing that often happens is when you bring up something you're struggling with, it clears the way for the other guys that you're with to feel comfortable sharing the things that they're struggling with, because there's sin is humiliating, it's shameful, right? I think as men, we experience shame, especially with certain types of sins that might be in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this tendency, a temptation to think that I'm the only one struggling with these things, right? And so by having the courage, you know, and I'm not talking about just with anybody, but you get your close group of friends,
mm-hmm.
and they need, like, God has put these people in your life for a reason. You need to trust in the Lord that these are the people that he has asked you and he made you to walk with.
Yeah, he says, St. Albert says, a friend is called a guardian of love, a physician of the soul. We're out of time on on the radio show, but check us out on the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Raise your glass. I love that phrase.
I also love that.
A friend is called a guardian of love, a physician of the soul. He sees friendship as kind of the spiritual friendship as an engine of real transformation. That this is where you're able to, if you are rooted in love, if you're rooted in the virtue of charity, there are going to be guardrails that need to be set up. And it's like, hey, listen, we don't do this or we don't do that in our friendship. And it's not because the friendship shouldn't be a series of we don't do this, this, and this. That's not what the virtuous life is. The virtuous life is not a bunch of no's.
Correct.
It's a bunch of yeses.
It's exclusive yeses.
And so that's what spiritual friendship is. It's not like, oh, when I get with this buddy, I may say things that I don't normally say in certain ways. I may be a little bit more vulgar. I may be a little bit more crass. I may be, talk about things that, or glorify things in my past that I shouldn't be glorifying.
That are not, in fact, glorious.
Right. And this is the guardrails that should be taking place. It's like, no, you're called to a much bigger yes than what we're discussing right now. And that calling is not just for me, but it's for you as well.
Yeah.
And I actually, if you're my best friend, I actually can't do it without you.
Right.
And so like, kind of get yourself together, because I'm over here limping and I need you as a crutch,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa.
Yeah, that's right. And so we first need to, you know, we need to be the kind of friend that we need our friends to be.
Right. I remember one time when we first started doing things like this, Dave, you know, there was several men's groups that we had started, and this was, you know, 15 years ago, and before we were both married.
We had like time.
We had time
to do all the things we wanted.
Right. And so like, you know, you and I both, I mean, I think we were part of like three, maybe four different types of men's groups.
Like monthly groups.
Monthly groups. Where we're like, basically you and I were going to either somebody else's house,
and I almost
once a week.
Yeah, I remember those times. It was great. I loved it.
I loved it.
Sign me up for all the stuff. I'm here for it. You know, it was that moment, that phase, that season of zeal, mm-hmm. that we started off talking about.
And, you know, still to this day, some of these groups still exist. We're not maybe there all the time, but they still exist and they still do things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember once we were doing these groups and, you know, I got married and then, you know, you got married and we had to start being more particular with how we spend our time. But we still wanted to at least be part of at least one of these men's groups. Because, you know, it's good to get together. It's good to have a good dram and maybe a cigar and, you know, just share life together. And I remember trying to pitch it to my wife, right? And be like, all right, honey, I know that I was at work all day and you were here, or you were at work or, you know, whatever. And I know that we haven't really seen each other, but tonight I'm going to go off and be in a men's group. And we're going to talk about Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have some whiskey, but we're talking about Jesus.
Yeah.
And I thought like, that may be kind of a tough sell. And Lady Haley obviously let me, you know, she was like, yeah, go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember afterwards at some point, maybe weeks or months later, and I was talking to her again about it, saying like, you know, is it okay if I go? And she goes, yes, I want you to go. And the way she said it, I was kind of like, really? She said, yes.
Am I in trouble?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like one of those things like, all right, why are you wanting me to go? You know, why are you wanting me out of the house?
Are we okay?
Yeah,
doing okay?
Is everything okay? I just want to take a temperature gauge here. Like, is everything okay? And she said, no. Like, you're a better husband when you get back from those groups.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I had a very almost identical experience with Lady Pamela. She made comments to me of that exact variety of, you know, that she felt like this was something that I really needed to do and that she appreciated that I did actually, even though it did take time away, that it was something that was good for me and therefore was good for our family.
Mm-hmm.
Because I cannot be the husband and father I need to be if I don't have the support that God made me to have, right?
Right. So I think that to be cautious whenever you know you start these men's groups, that you're not trying to be like the teacher or the leader, so to speak, that you're not trying to fix people, that you're, because you got problems too, you know, that having a friendship is willing the good of the other, a true friendship. And that means like it's more of giving yourself to that person, not giving the information to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big difference. And that you're not trying to fix the person, that you're trying to just walk along with that person and share. Like I always say this phrase, and it may sound cliche and it may like not resonate with some people, but it really resonates with me. It's like, I just want to share my life with you.
Mm-hmm.
And because my life is so much about the love of Christ, this automatically going to be talking about the church because that is my life. But sharing my life with you doesn't mean that I need a theological essay preached to me.
Right. Yeah. You need to decide who it is that you want to commit to. Right. You need to be in a committed relationship with your bros. And I know different people are in different situations. We get emails from people a lot who say, oh, I would love that. I struggle. You know, there's no one at my church who's my age, or, you know, blah, 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 blah. So some people, men are on different sides of the spectrum where either they are longing for masculine, good masculine friendships. And then there are other people who are in all of the groups, and, you know, depending on how, you know, what your life looks like, that may or may not be a problem. But if all you're doing is going to the men's club at church where there's all these guys all the time, but you don't have a small, tight-knit group of committed friends, then you're missing a key thing. Because that smaller group of committed friends where, you know, we're getting together weekly, or we're actually taking time just to be together so that we can just share our lives. You know, we want our lives to be the same. We want to have the same life together. That's step one. That's actually the most important thing. You know, if you it's subsidiarity, right? That we want to have these concentric circles. The smaller circles are always the most important circles, right? It's the closer, more intimate things always supersede the less intimate things, right? You have to have a priority.
Yeah, this reminds me of a story, and I actually wrote a little bit about this on my Substack last week. But recently we had...
Every time you bring up your Substack, I have no idea why. I like feel the urge to continue to belittle your Substack, and that is so rude. It's so... like, I have no...
Dude, belittle it. It's
dude,
funny.
I've never even seen your Substack. It might be awesome.
Dude, it you belittle it, man.
Substack is not... it's not even part of my world.
Right. I get it. It's okay.
I just find it just, I want you to know I resist those urges.
Thanks, dude.
Except for that one time when I didn't. Sorry.
And kind of like this time, I mean, kind of a backhanded resist, but that's fine.
But maybe it's good.
Maybe so. Maybe it's... anyway. It reminds me of, so there's a guy who recently came into our office, and he's officing with us now. And one of the things that we do at our office is about once every 2 weeks or so, we get together. We have a small kind of, what we call it men's intellectual hour. It's basically like a kind of a little reading group.
Yeah.
And every 2 weeks or so we get together, and we're reading Dante, and
which one?
Purgatorio.
Nice.
And you were invited, but you said no.
Do not remember saying no or being invited, but that's okay. Well, keep going.
I asked you, and you said no. I already, you know, I'm already doing that.
Okay, I believe you.
But anyway, so he joined us, right? And so because he's part of the, you know, he's in our office, and he's like, yeah, I don't want. And he's Catholic, and he's been Catholic, but I would say he's just kind of, you know, he's a young dad, and you know, I think he's kind of like really wanting to get more into his faith, and
having children will do that.
Having children will do that to you. And we finished, I don't know, Canto 5 or 6 or 7, something like that, you know, the other day. And he called me into his office like the next day. We were kind of just walking by. He was like, hey, can you come here? And I walked in, and he goes, yeah. I said, yeah. And he goes like, I gotta tell you, man, I really, really enjoy meeting together for the book club. And I said, yeah, man, me too. He goes, no, you don't understand. Like, I didn't even realize that friendship like that existed. And so my whole life, and like, you know, we're friends, but like, it's like men getting together, talking about real things and you know, obviously in the Inferno or the Purgatorio, like real theological discussions just naturally happen. And then kind of like, how does that apply to my life? And like, oh,
yeah, man, I don't, it's not about being productive.
I'm like struggling with this, you know, like it's an examination of conscience almost, like as you're going through and reading this.
Yeah, it is.
And he said, like, for the last, you know, 10 years of my business career, after I got out of college, I always thought that I had buddies. I always thought that I had friends, you know, my fraternity brothers, the guys that I went to high school with that were friends, that we have a group text together, that we throw a group chat in every once in a while. And I always thought, yeah, I have a ton of friends. My phone book is full of contacts of friends, right? And he said, but I didn't even know that I was not even, like, I couldn't even search for this because I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
And now that I've realized it, now that I've come in contact with it, I realize how big of a gap I had in my life for the last 10 years. And I'm incredibly grateful to be able to know that something like this exists.
Yeah.
And he just had like this heart of gratitude. And like, listen, like, it's not like we did anything. You know what I mean? It's not like a big thing.
Yeah.
It's more of like just good men coming together, wanting to have a better life and to talk about real things and take their intellectual life seriously, whether or not we actually understand everything Dante says, because we're not going to. At least, you know, your first read, you're not going to understand everything unless you're like St. Thomas Aquinas or something like that. But it revealed to him something. He's like, I didn't even know I was searching for this because I didn't know what it was. And then when that veil kind of opens up and you can see it, you can't unsee it anymore. And then you realize this whole time, this thought where I thought I was fine, I thought I was good, I thought that I had friends, and I thought that, you know, everything was going well. I didn't even realize I didn't have this. And now that I do, I see this massive hole in my life, this gaping part of my life that I thought I had covered, and I just didn't.
Yeah. I mean, if you just stop and think about what that means, and I think there's a lot of guys in this position who they think, oh, yeah, I've got friends. I have a lot of friends. But what they have are a lot of buddies, even well-meaning buddies. Mm-hmm. If you do not have a man in your life who lives a Eucharistic life, a man whose life revolves around the sacraments, then you don't know what friendship is, right? This is the brilliant insight of Aristotle in the Nicomachean Ethic, that he talks about. The whole book is ordered towards this crescendo of authentic friendship. That there are hierarchies of friendship, and he starts off the book by talking about virtue. The whole book, I mean, he's not a Catholic, he's not a Christian, he didn't have what we have, but he still had this brilliant insight to see that you cannot be a friend if you don't first know what the good is. You can't be an authentic friend because you can't even help guide, orient, point, and form this person that you're sharing life with in the good, because you don't know what it is, right? And so if you don't have a man in your life who recognizes Christ in the Eucharist, then these people, they might be good people with good intentions, but they simply don't know what the good is. The good that they see is not good enough. Anything short of Christ's presence in his church that he established, this is his mission, he came to establish his church to fulfill what Judaism had always pointed towards, right? That Christ, that God had been guiding this people, set apart from the entire world, so that Christ's advent on earth in time for us might be this cosmic change and shift, where he established his church on the apostles, specifically with Peter at the head, to guide in the as Stuart after his ascension. But simultaneously, while he remained with us forever in the Eucharist, right? If you don't have somebody who recognizes that truth, which is what God had been pointing humanity to for thousands of years, constantly building and preparing the way so that we might be ready for that moment. If you don't have someone who sees that truth and who knows that good, then they cannot point you towards that good, right? And if you've never had that, if you've never experienced it, you simply don't know what you're missing. And it makes you realize that where you also have fallen short as a friend yourself, mm-hmm. for everyone you have ever known, right? So you have to have good, authentic friendships. You have to be very selective. Your friendships should be sacred, right?
Set apart.
They should be set apart. Those, that intimate group where you can be vulnerable because, hey, we all share this life in common with Christ in the Eucharist, which is what he wants for all of us, right?
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I got.
Make a friend. Be a friend. Bring a friend to Christ.